Okay, I think we should get started now. So today I'm mainly going to talk about something that you really already know about, namely functions. So you've done functions a little bit in Haskell, and in Java, functions, well, the closest you've seen to functions are called static methods. So I'm going to give you a very quick overview about what static methods are, then look at them in more detail, talk a bit about the way in which using static methods can help us organize our code, and then there's some summary stuff and various other bits and pieces. So I will sometimes say static methods, and I'll sometimes say functions, and you can think of them for the moment as being equivalent. So functions, they take arguments, and they can take no arguments, or one argument, two arguments, and so on. If they return a value, they can return at most one value, which can be a little bit limiting sometimes. They don't need to return a value. So you can have functions in Java which are perfectly good and don't return a value. And you think, well, why would I want to do that? The reason is that they have things called side effects. So they're like dodgy medicine. And a side effect of a function that takes no arguments might be print something to the terminal. So that's not a return value, that's just a side effect of executing that function. And actually you've already come across quite a few static functions. So math.random, math.absolute, max, and so on, integer.parseInt. Those are all static functions. Static methods. And we haven't started talking about objects yet. But when we do, we'll see that objects are things that are created by classes or conform to class definitions. And we'll see that there's a distinction between methods that are particularly associated with objects and methods that are not associated with objects. So we don't know about objects yet. So in a sense, you just have to take for granted that they will be coming soon. Now, everything in Java lives inside a class. So something which isn't a method associated with an object just lives in that class. And so sometimes people talk about class methods as well. So a class method and a static method are kind of the same thing. Two names, the same idea. And when we write something like this math.random, that means we're calling a static method that's defined in the math class. And it will do what it does regardless of what object it's called on. As I said, this distinction will make a lot more sense later on. But for the moment, just think of a static method as something which has its existence inside a class, but isn't specific to any particular object in that class. Okay, so we haven't actually come across this yet. But you have used this, which is a static function, and we used it a lot. Right? So you've already been using static methods from your first exercise. So I've mentioned this thing about side effects. Type declarations. So if you had max in Haskell going from int to int to int, so it takes two integer arguments to give an int value, in Java, we write the signature like this, And this is also going to be the header of a method definition. So ignore the public static bit for a moment. So int there is going to be the type of the return value. And we've got two parameters, x and y, and they are both of type int. So that's directly equivalent, just another notation. This is an example where there's no return value, and to signal that we use the keyword void, or empty, so no return value. And in this case, we've got parameters fname, lname, which are both of type string. Static, you're going to need to put that in, and that tells the Java compiler that it's a method that's just defined for everything in a whole class. Public means that it can be called from outside that class, but we're not going to worry about that right at the moment. So here's an example. This is kind of stuff you already know about. We want, let's say, we've got a point here, and we care about points that are in a certain distance to that. So maybe some threshold. These could be things that are close enough to care about. And so we want to define a distance on points in two-dimensional space. So we've got distance defined in the usual way, assuming that P and Q are both have an X and a Y coordinate, which I've written here as P0 and P1, Q0, Q1. So we just translate that directly into Java. So here we've actually disaggregated the points. So this is X coordinate and the Y coordinate of the first point, and the x-coordinate and the y-coordinate of the second point. And then we create we're going to store the distance in these doubles, d1, d2, and then we call square root on the result of multiplying d1 by itself and d2 by itself. So that's, in a sense, neither here nor there. It's just stuff that you can do. What makes it a Java function? Well, we've got a body. That's everything here. So that's the kind of code that you've already been writing. We've got the method name, distance, and we've got some parameters. So we've already looked at that. So the parameters consist of the name of the parameter and its type. Say it's double and it's x0. We've got the return type here. That's important. And these things here are called modifiers. So just stick them in for the time being and don't worry too much about why they are there. These two variables here inside that method body, we call those local variables. So they're local to that function definition. And we'll see later on that there's a different kind of variable that you have in Java programs called instance variables, which work somewhat differently. But for the moment, just say, all right, I know about local variables, and I can write them in a function definition. And this whole thing here is a return statement. And this value here, how this has to evaluate to something of the type that we said it was going to return. So we're making a commitment in that method definition to return a double. And we have to make sure that we honor that commitment. So we have to have the right return value at the end of our function definition. I mean, strictly speaking, it doesn't have to be linear at the end, but when you exit the whatever code you run, there has to be an appropriate return value. And there can be syntactically, so you could say, if today is Monday, then return hooray. If it's Friday, return double hooray. So you can have multiple return statements, but assuming that only one of those clauses actually executes, then you only actually get one return for that value, for that record, for the call of that particular method. Calling a function. So I can say, all right, I want to have a variable d of type double, and I'm going to define its value as a result of calling a method. And I'm going to, in this case, call the int distance on those particular literal values. Or I could define some variables and then use those in the call. So I think that's all familiar from stuff you've already done in Haskell, pretty much. So I'm just going to this. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to say something about how you put this kind of static method inside a larger Java program. So one question you might be asking, all right, I know how to define main methods. Now you've given me another way of defining another static method. How do they relate? So that's what I want to spell out now. And the particular details of this illustration do not matter. I'm just going to assume that we're going to take something from the command line, and we're going to take the first pair of arguments as being a center point, then every subsequent pair as coordinates of the further points, and then we run that, and we're going to spit out these distances like this. So as I said, the exact details do not matter. The important thing here is we've got our main method as usual, and we are calling this function, this method distance, which we defined up here. So it's standard to put main as your last method, and any other static functions, static methods, will be defined elsewhere inside that same class. So we've defined distance, and then we've called it inside main. And in order to actually execute this program in such a way that distance does anything for us, we have to put it inside the main method, because the main is our main point of entry for running the program. So what we've got here is a new way of controlling execution flow. So we saw already that things like if-else statements or for loops were ways of controlling flow. Functions or methods are another way of doing that. And again, in a sense, you already know about calling one function inside another, but now you're doing it in this procedural framework of Java. So, as before, we've got this definition, the one that we discussed, and there's some stuff here that you don't have to worry about. It just says, look at the arguments on the command line, turn them into doubles. Then we have this variable dist as defined as a result of calling distance, and then we print something out. So when we call that whole, we're going to create our program, we're going to compile it, and then we're going to run it on the command line in the way that I showed earlier. And when you run it, the first thing we're going to do, or the first thing the in Java virtual machine is going to do is run the main method. So The flow of control says, all right, first of all, I'm going to see what main has got to do. So then I go junk, 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 junk through all those various little bits of code. And I'm using the arguments that I've taken from the command line. So args is going to be an array that's got those four strings in it, let's say. Those are going to give me values for points, the array points, which are parsed into doubles. And then I'm going to use those as, in effect, binding these parameters here. Because we've defined center x and center y, and then we also take, we call indices, we index into the points array. And for this particular set of points then, that means you can plug in those values when we call distance. And then, okay, so we're calling distance, so we have to look for the definition of distance. We go up to that. So we're going right up back here. Whoa, big jump. And we're using the bindings that we established down here to plug in values now for x0, x or y0, x1 or y1. So although people aren't very consistent about this, I will try and use the following terminology. I'll call these things here in the method definition, I'm going to call those parameters. When we call a function, what we're giving to it are arguments. So we're supplying arguments when we call a function, or call a method, and those act as bindings for the parameters. So we've got bindings here for those parameters. And then we need to substitute those values into the body, and we do our necessary computation, and then we get a return value, which let's say is 3.61. So that's the result of evaluating that method on those arguments. So we take that, and plop, it goes back into this variable. So we're now going, we've called the function, it's returned a value, we've taken that return value and put it back into that statement, the assignment, and that then gets where is it? Distance is then going to be plugged into the, or the value of distance will come out in the final statement. So you're all happy about that? Good. So just go through it again. We've got, we transfer control to the body of the function. The parameters get the values which were given in the call by the arguments. We execute the function. And the value that we get back is returned to the calling code. And then controls go back, control goes back to the calling code. So I'm saying that this stuff here is calling the distance function. So this is all the calling code. This is what gets called. Now, in general, functions are said to work, or methods work by, is passed by value in Java. So you assign the values given by the arguments when you call the method or the function. And the function only has access to the values. And it can't change the values in the calling code. Let me give an example of that. So here we've got, I've defined x to be 0. And then this is the calling code here. I've called add1 on x. And then I say, well, what is the value of x after I've called that method? And what this method does is it simply takes its argument and increments it by 1. So inside this function body, num is now whatever it was before plus 1. So if it was called on the argument 0, num has value 1. But in the calling code, x is entirely untouched, unsullied, not modified. And so when we print out the value, we just get 0. Now there's a but. Now the but is this. What happens when we call methods on arrays? Now, to be consistent, we cannot change the array itself. So we still pass arrays by value. So we can't change the length, say. But we can change its elements. And that is an important source of side effects. So let's give another example. So here we've got add1, which is taking this array A as its argument. So it's got 0, 1 as its two elements. Inside the body, this says, all right, we're going to increment the first element of an array by 1. And when we print out the contents of that array, rather than getting 0, 1, we get 1, 1. So we have changed the first element of that array. And that change is still holding after we've exited that the function that does that. So strictly speaking, A is still the same, but it's got a different element value, a different element in it. So this is an example of where we've called a function or a method on an array, and notice that it's void here. It doesn't return a value, but it does do something. It does that thing as a side effect. And in this week's exercises, there's a bunch of them where you're asked to define static methods in two ways. So we could have done this differently. We could have done this method in such a way that it returned a new value, which was a new array. So we could define this two ways, one in which it does this, the other in which we have an array of ints as its return value. And it would return a new array, which, say, had values 1, 1 in this case. Typically, if you create a return value that's a new array, that almost always involves some copying from the input array to the return array, to the new array that's returned. And that's okay if you have a relatively small input array. But if you have a big one, you might do a lot of copying. And if you call that method many times, you have lots and lots of copying. So, for efficiency reasons, it's often better to do modification in place of arrays. So when I say modify an array in place, I mean do something like this. You don't return a new array, you just dink around with the elements of the array that you've got as an input, and then those changes, those modifications, will persist after you've exited from that function. Okay. Technically, the signature of a Java function or Java method is its name and its parameter list. But I'm going to typically refer to the signature as being also the return value and the modifiers. Why the return value isn't strictly part of the signature is something that we'll talk about later on. It's to do with inheritance. So the return type is in the header of the function. Void means doesn't return a value. if there is a non-void return type, then you must have a return statement of the right type. So here's some examples of, more examples of some static methods. So this one just produces cubes. So we do a loop. We call cube on I for each value of I in that loop. And then this says, all right, this is the parameter. Declare, what kind of variable is this called, int j? Local, yeah. So we've declared a new local variable j, whose value is I times I times I, and we return j. Okay, that's great. What happens here? So the parameter is called int I, and we've got a local variable which we've also called I. Now, there's a sense in which parameters are a bit like local variables. And if you try to execute this, it won't compile. It will say, you tried to define the same variable twice. Because it's, in effect, said, I've already got this variable here. Now you're trying to tell me to define it again. I don't like that. So that will not work. On the other hand, not on the other hand. Moreover, this won't work. Why is that? No return. So it said, you said you're going to return an int, but you didn't. Now, this looks very much like the case we had before, but we haven't actually declared a new variable I. We've just used it again. And we're allowed to do that. That will be fine. And we can even make it a little more cheeky, and we can just say return I times I times I. So we can do all the computation we want inside the return value. And that's also fine. Okay. What are we doing? I'm going to come back. Let me see, how should I do this? Eclipse. Now, I know some of you already know about using Eclipse. Some of you may have tried using Eclipse and said, I don't like it. I'm going to use some other WYSI kind of development environment like NetBeans. But not everybody here will have used Eclipse. So how many people here haven't used Eclipse or anything like it? OK, a goodly number. So I'm going to recommend this week that you start using Eclipse. And there is a let's see. If you go to the web page, you should see a link to Eclipse Exercise 1. Is that going to come on? Appear? Oh, it's loading. All right. Tedious. Take it from me that this will work. I'm not going to try and authenticate now. It is a very simple introduction to using Eclipse with pictures and everything. And it'll get you started. Eclipse is available in Dice on the command line. And why should you use Eclipse? For anybody who has used it, do you want to give me an answer? Yeah? Okay, so one of the things you may have noticed is that your programs don't always compile first time. Has anybody noticed that? Yeah. So one of the things Eclipse does, and I haven't got a picture here, but you can find out yourself, is that if you make a mistake, it will put little red wriggly lines and little kind of exclamation marks and crosses and things and says, there's a problem here. And sometimes it's going to say, you can fix this problem by doing such and such. So Eclipse will detect a lot of problems before you actually hit the compile button. It will make it much easier for you to write code that does compile. And one of the ways it does that is by using the types. So you know there's lots of types in Java, and it uses that information to say, well, you said this here, but then you said that over there, and that doesn't quite work. Or it will say, you define this local variable twice. It'll do all kinds of things for you in terms of checking errors, syntactic mistakes. And that's really helpful. Any other things that Eclipse might do for you? Yeah?
If you're writing a program which has like a lot of source files, a lot of classes, then it helps organize it.
Okay, so this is something which won't be relevant right away, but when we start doing real object-oriented stuff, it will tell you how classes relate to each other. So for example, if I have a class of mammals and a class of carnivores and a class of dogs, it will tell me that dogs is a subclass of carnivores, which is a subclass of mammals, and it'll even give me a nice little diagram showing those relationships. Any other fans of Eclipse that want to suggest things? Well, one of the things which I think you might not find about right away, but is really useful, is it'll put in boilerplate for you. So you can do this kind of completion key control, and it will put in the skeleton of the main, the main method declaration. It'll put all the bits and pieces in for you. It will essentially, you can generate an awful lot of the boring bits of a Java program just by hitting a few keys in Eclipse, and after a while, that becomes extremely useful. Why do you think I didn't get you using Eclipse straight away? Why not start it in week one? Sorry? So you can see what benefits it will bring you. That's right. The difference between Eclipse and what you've been doing so far is a bit like the difference between, okay, you're going on a trip, do you walk, which is using the command line and the text editor, or do you take a rather swish limousine, which has all kinds of different controls and ventilation and really good suspension, which means you don't feel the bumps in the road. So the advantage of the really plush limousine is you can go further. It's a lot easier to do a lot of stuff. The advantage of going by foot is you actually see more, probably, and you know more what the road is like. You know what the pavement is like. And also, you're more self-reliant. You can do pretty much anything you want to with very few extra tools. So maybe you're in a situation where Eclipse is broken, but you can still compile your Java programs. You can still run them because you know how to do it on the command line. So I wanted you to to kind of really do the horrible, difficult, well, not difficult, the horrible kind of little steps walking along the pavement to begin with, just so that you really saw what was going on. But now you've got to a stage where you can do that and you can make use of something more powerful, which is what Eclipse is. Another really good thing Eclipse does is it does automatic formatting for you. So it puts all the indents in the right place. That means your code will be readable, which is a good thing. So this week, the first exercise is do the Eclipse exercise, if you haven't already used it. When you first see Eclipse, you think, why does he ask me to do this? It looks so confusing. There are all these different windows and different menus. I don't know what they mean. It's really confusing. Just calm down, concentrate on a few simple things, do the easy things in the exercise, and don't worry about everything else. Gradually, you will learn, or we will introduce you to the more complicated stuff. Even so, there may be, it's like Microsoft Word, it may be there, you know, 80% of it you never use. But doesn't mean the other 20% isn't useful. All right, I'm not a great fan of Microsoft Word, but you know what I mean. That there's, you can still get a long way with some limited functionality, even if you don't use the whole caboodle. So, after that plug for Eclipse, let's go back to some other stuff. Are there any questions about what I just said? Yeah.
Is there something similar for Windows?
Okay, the question was, can you use it for Windows? So let me just do this slide as well. Yes, if you just Google for Eclipse, you will get the right site. There'll be a page that says download. You can download it for any platform. There's actually a rather bewildering number of choices. I suggest you choose the download that's called Eclipse IDE for Java Developers. It's got what you want. The other thing I should say is that, regrettably, at the end of the semester, you will have to do an exam. So it's an online programming exam. You can use Eclipse in the exam. So anything, any tools which are available on the DICE desktop will be available to you in the exam. So in particular, if you actually much prefer NetBeans to Eclipse, which some people do, you can use NetBeans. So anything that you can find in one of those menus on the DICE desktop now will be available to you in the exam. Any other questions? Okay. So let's try and wind back. So in a way, this slide is kind of wasted on you because you already know about modularity. You already know about functions because you've done them in Haskell. Nevertheless, if you were thinking about coming to programming just from what you've done so far, basically you just get a big mess of code, lots and lots of steps. And modularity means breaking things into useful chunks that you can reuse. And so taking all that big mess of stuff you've done already and packaging it up into little functions means your code is more modular, more reusable, easier to maintain. And as you may know, maintaining programs is 90% of the work. Writing them is easy. It's maintaining them that's hard. Also, if you've got functions or methods, then they provide you with a way of executing the functionality in a way that hides the details from the calling code. So for example, we had this thing where we had double D equals distance applied to such and such arguments. That calling code doesn't care about what happens inside the body of distance. You don't care about what happens inside the body of math.max. You just need to know that it works. So when you call it, you don't care about the implementation. So here is an example of, I don't know, this is kind of probably a bit much to go through on the screen in a lecture. Maybe I'll just whip through it and you'll get a general impression. Okay. Bunch of code, bit confusing, hard to read. Can we make it better? The output is meant to look like this, so it's about how much you need to save if you have a target for how much pocket money you want to get. And basically the idea is that, okay, we had something here where boy name was boy first name, a string, plus the empty string, plus boy second name. Here we had girl name, which looked very similar, except it's got girl first name instead of boy first name, and girl second name instead of boy second name. So that's not exactly duplicate, but it's about as hard, as near as you can get, right? We're repeating ourselves. So you should not repeat yourselves. Okay, I can repeat myself in a lecture, but you should never repeat yourselves. Do not repeat yourselves. Do not repeat yourselves. So let's create a new function here called joinNames. It takes two strings, and it says, all right, I'll return n1 plus a space plus n2. So that is extracting a new function, and then we call it here and here. And that's all there is to it. We've got a bit of functionality that we want to use more than once. We put it into a function, put it into a static method, and then we can call it as many times as we want, rather than having to cut and paste, cut and paste, cut and paste. That's really all this is about. Another example. So what we've done here is something called refactoring. What is refactoring? Changing code that doesn't modify its behavior. So when we call it, it does the same thing, but it's much cleaner and better organized and looks nicer. It's more beautiful. So you can think of it as a bit like going from something really ghastly to something that's a bit closer to Haskell. So this is horrible. This isn't quite as elegant as Haskell, but it's better. So refactoring is a kind of mini industry. And one of the things you'll notice about Eclipse is it gives you nice ways to do refactoring. So there are lots of refactoring techniques. The one we just talked about is called extract method. So we identify something which gets repeated. We think, oh, I could make that into a function. So you define the function and then call it. I am going to skip that. Okay, so winding up. Yeah, this is all motherhood and apple pie. Recursive functions. Do you know what recursive functions are? Yes. Do you think you could write a recursive function in Java? Great, because there's one in the exercise this week. So you may need to think a bit about it, but give it a go. If you have problems, ask a demonstrator. What else? Clips we talked about. Some reading for you. Okay, so I've got another few minutes. Don't go yet. just one last thing I want to talk about. Oops. So there's something else in this week's exercise, and it's to do with input to your programs. So input is important. You already know about lots of input devices, output devices. Java, one of the powerful things about Java is ways of defining different kinds of input and output. So the only thing you've done so far is you've used standard out print line for output, and you've used command line arguments that get sucked up by the args parameter of main for input. Now, using command line arguments can be useful for a few values, but it doesn't scale, right? Doesn't work if you have hundreds of inputs, or thousands, or millions. Also, it's sometimes limiting. You have to do all the input before the program starts executing. That means you can't do it interactively. So you might want to give the user some prompts. But to make a prompt, your program has to be already running. But if you have to give the command line arguments before it starts running, you can't have it running, so you can't have prompts. You will see in the Eclipse exercise today that you can make Eclipse take command line arguments, but it's tedious. So there's something called standard input, which is something that is a notion that is deeply built into the Unix operating system. And in Cedric and Wayne, in their book and also on their website, they have defined a library called StandardIn, which captures some aspects of that. And it's actually a class, and it has static methods. And in one of the exercises this week, you'll get an illustration of using this and calling some of these methods, in particular read double and read int. And those are very similar to integer parse int and double parse double that you've used before. One of the big advantages from a practical point of view is you can use them to, there's a little window in Eclipse called the console, and you can type stuff in there. And it's much easier to do that when you want to give new input to your program than messing around with the configuration of run. So again, I would suggest you do that. You'll need to download this library, and I've given you instructions for doing that in the exercises this week. Okay, that's me done. Thank you for bearing with me. That's a good question. Very good question. You should ask, as Phil would say, you should ask me that next time. But certain parts of the library are just built into the language, into the Java language. So you don't need to explicitly import them. Other things you do, it's not really predictable. Which?
Yeah, thank you.
It's a good question.
I wanted to ask you if you could recommend me a book on Java, I mean, but in a further way, I mean, like connecting Java with the web and the SQL databases or something like that. I saw that there is Java in a nutshell, but I don't know if it's a good book.
It's Java is not that great, and it's not that easy to use in terms, well, I think it's a weakness of Java that it doesn't have easy ways of interacting with relational databases. I mean, there are lots of ways of doing it, but there isn't a kind of like, oh, this is the easy, obvious way to do it. What do you know other programming languages?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you take something like PHP or Python or something, you can write it in like one line or something, and you can use SQLite or something. There tends to be kind of three or four different ways of doing it in Java, and none of them are like necessarily the obvious way. In terms of a book, I don't have an immediate recommendation. I can have a look at the ones I've got in the big pile. Why don't you send me an email and I will do my best to make a recommendation. For the web stuff, which things are you interested in? Which aspects of web? You mean like, in effect, running something like a CGI script that's Java, or something more sophisticated?
I mean, yeah, something like what we're doing right now.
Do you mean for the project? Or
No. In general, what we're doing, like program, but connected with the web.
So what would be the minimal example of what you want to do? Would it be like taking form data and then computing something, returning a value?
Yeah, maybe connected with the HTML, the JavaScript thing of the web. I mean, do something like with these languages and connect it with Java and Java extract information.
Okay. There's almost too much, but a lot of it is kind of rather heavyweight. You know what I mean by heavyweight?
No,
exactly. You have these big libraries with lots of functionality, and they can do lots of stuff, but it's all quite complicated, and you have to learn quite a lot. But again, I'll see if I've got something that I can recommend to you.
Okay, it may be like a book for Java in general, but in more details than the
okay.
In programming.
Sure. Okay, I'll do that. You send me an email.
Okay.